from New York City, it's the Gary Noel Show. And now, your host, Gary Noel.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Noel, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Today, the latest on health and healing, and why you should be careful about the skin products that you use, because unless they're really good, they could make you sick. In fact, the FDA has just recently warned about mercury poisoning linked to skin products. Also, they now have something more to advocate for breast milk feeding, and I'll tell you what that is for all those of you who are doing that. When you eat matters, not just what you eat. This is from Cell Metabolism, a major peer-reviewed journal, talking about things that many old-timers, our grandparents told us. Well, they were right. Also, religion is a potent force for cooperation and conflict, research shows. And this is from Science Daily. And I thought it would be of value to share this with us because you can come down on either side of this issue. And the world is entering an antibiotic-resistant crisis. What that means is that you could get a scratch on your knee and end up dying from it. This is according to the head of the World Health Organization, so I'll share that with you, and what we can do so we're not putting antibiotics into our body. Also, from our Environmental Watch today, the G8 event on global agricultural development is taking place as we speak. It's being attended by our president with the G8 leaders and African leaders. Now, all this is being touted in a good way, positive, upbeat, advancing global agricultural development and food and nutrition security in Africa. Well, that's a winner. We should all support that. No, we shouldn't. We shouldn't support any of it. It's a complete fraud. Why is it that the mainstream media can just never, ever challenge the insanity, the fraud, the greed that goes on? Well, I'll tell you why we should be opposed to this and what they're really doing and who are the speakers. Oh, they didn't include the speakers, but I found out the CEOs of Monsanto and Syngenta and DuPont, absolutely the biggest companies in the world making genetically engineered foods. And oh, Monsanto's giving $50 million to African agricultural development. Yeah, and what are you getting in return, and why is our president there promoting you, and why have you had unlimited access to the White House, and why is it you managed to get your lawyers from Monsanto to run the FDA? But they have. So I'll give you the true story on that and why we should be very concerned. Also, they found a herbal extract that can curb binge drinking from down in McLean Hospital at Harvard University, and I'll tell you what that is. Then from our segment today dealing with issues and commentaries, I'm going to give you an abbreviated form of four that all interconnect. One is from Michael Payne from Op-Ed News on corporatism's plan for dumbing down of America. Why? What would be the motive? He explains. Global corporations undermining democracy everywhere. We'll explain. Then two other issues. Welcome to the Knowledge Factory from Jennifer Brody. Remember I mentioned last week that the latest study shows that 350,000 Americans with advanced degrees, PhDs, are on food stamps or have applied for food stamps. Quote, they are a part of an often overlooked and growing subgroup of PhD recipient and professors and others with advanced degrees who had to apply for food stamps or some other food or government aid. Why? How's this happening? Weren't we told the more advanced your degree, the more likely you were to earn a good living and be able to support yourself? Well, that's what we were told, but then there's another reality. I'll deal with that. We have two newsmaker guests today, and one is based upon the New York Times today. Paul Krugman, the Nobel Prize-winning economist from Princeton, has a piece, and it's entitled Apocalypse Fairly Soon, The Moment of Truth in Europe. Apocalypse Soon, The Moment of Truth. Mr. Krugman, You are a brilliant man with a lot of interesting insight. But Gerald Celente, quite simply, has got it right, always ahead of you and everyone else. And we did this 2 years ago. Apocalypse, the breakdown and detail, minutia of how it would happen. But it's good that you finally in the New York Times found that we were in trouble today. We've been telling you about the collapse of the euro, collapse of Greece, how it would fall, who would fall first, second, third, fourth, fifth, how it would manifest, what would happen to the dollar, what would happen to the price of gold and silver, all of which are artificially manipulated now, what would happen to value of our currency when the Chinese go off of it. Yeah, they're going to. That's news to you. But let's see if you can get that in the New York Times in the next 2 years. So Gerald Celente, with a newsmaker, offering some insights about what Paul Krugman correctly stated. I have no argument with his apocalypse time in Europe. It's just, my goodness, this is like someone waking up today and saying, tsunami in Japan. Yeah, that happened over a year ago. Then we're going to be joined by Les Leopold. And Les is going to take a look at the truth behind J.P. Morgan debacle and just show it as a larger problem riddled throughout Wall Street and why our government will not, cannot, and must not do anything about it. In other words, we will see nothing at all at any level change as long as we have corporate Democrats, don't you love them, corporate conservatives, just how sweet are they? In positions of power. And they're the only ones that corporate media and corporate institutions and corporate think tanks, the Heritage Foundation and the Cato Institute and Free Enterprise Institute, Carnegie Institute, they're the only ones that acknowledge have any truth. So you see, this is just a game for those on the inside, and all the rest of us are supposed to watch it, obey what they say, and don't challenge them. If we do, we're immediately called radical and put off to the sides. So here's an insider's insider, Les Leopold. And he's going to talk about what's really going on and how the worst is ahead. As you see, we have a lot to share. Oh, remember I told you I'm out here finding a lot of hungry senior citizens? I'm not talking about the historical poor. I'm not talking about the uneducated. I'm not talking about the people I came from in Appalachia or the people I've been filming down in the dirt farms of Louisiana and Mississippi and Alabama. I'm talking about people who worked for 30 years, 20 years, who were financially frugal, who lived within their means. Wait till you hear what just came out an hour ago from Medical News Today. This you haven't heard about. This I'll share. Ben, I filmed it. So we have probably 400 hours on film. And wow. It confirms what I've been finding out, and it's missed the mainstream media entirely. Not a single story in the mainstream media about that, anywhere, left or right. Let's begin. From the FDA, federal health officials are warning consumers not to use skin creams, beauty, and antiseptic soaps or lotions that might contain mercury. The products are marked as skin lighteners and anti-aging treatments that remove age spots, freckles, blemishes, and wrinkles. But they also can contain a whole lot of chemicals you don't want in your body. So look carefully at all the ingredients. Otherwise, you can end up having the mercury that's in the cosmetics end up in your body, and it's very easily absorbed. You put one drop of mercury on your skin, it's going right into the skin, and that is dangerous. So watch the ingredient list. When I grew up, everybody was breastfed. It would come later that people were formula-fed because there was a major movement to condition all of the pediatricians that this was the right thing to do. One of the leading champions in the United States in the 1970s and 80s for formula feeding was a president of the, I think it was either Oregon or Washington Pediatricians Association, and she told me that they would deliver cases to her office or to her doorstep of her house. And then she began to see the truth and look into it and found out that, gee whiz, she and a lot of others had made a big mistake. But because she was in a position of influencing, she began to bring this up at state meetings. And, of course, those state meetings were hosted by the pharmaceutical companies and by the formula companies. She said you'd check into a hotel, all expenses be paid, you get a suite, all the there'd be an open bar constantly, the most expensive meals you want, all paid for every month, but not by any doctor. And when you left there, you left with all kinds of information on why certain drugs were important for infants and formulas. That woman was warned, she told me. People came to her office, suits, she called them, men in suits. And they said that what you're doing is reckless to your career and would adversely affect you and your family. So we're going to give you this one visit and one visit only. Zip it. No more on this. What you do personally, that's your business. We have no problem with that. What you're advocating for others, we have a big problem with. So she thought about it for a while, and it angered her, because this was also at the height of the women's movement, and she felt that this was disempowering to her. And so she kept it up. Boom. They came down on her. And they took away her medical license on trumped-up charges. She was Harvard-educated. A perfect career. And couldn't get work anywhere. When I followed up, Janice Keller Phelps is her name. She was painting houses for a living. And she was a determinist. And she says, they might have broke my capacity to earn an income in pediatrics. They didn't break my spirit. So she was talking about why, if she could do nothing else, she would just advocate breastfeeding and having women. We had this long conversation because I said to her, I believe that if you can prevent it, an unplanned pregnancy, you should take realistically 2 years to prepare your body, to detoxify it, rebalance it, energize it, and that way you're at a very high probability of having a healthy child without the 1 in 3 miscarriages and all the other defects that we're seeing now. And also it's going to help the partners. And she was a major advocate of that also. She said, if only I could get women to breastfeed. And then she had a list and she would write little newsletters. Here's the latest on this. Quote, breast milk compound important in feeding good bacteria. This is from the Journal of Nutrition. Human milk, the saccharides in it, oligosaccharides, which are short-chain fatty acids, they feed in a very good way bacteria in the infant's gut. And that helps build a natural immunity. That's important. And this was research led by Professor Sharon Donovan, University of Illinois, who showed that the bacteria composition in the infant gut adjusts as the baby grows older and its needs change. And if you're giving the human breast milk, you're giving such a healthy pro-bacteria, whereas if you're giving the formulas, you're giving unhealthy. So that's important. Breastfeeding, once again, should be what is advocated, but you have to have a mother who's aware and healthy herself, because otherwise, if she drinks, if she smokes, if she eats a lot of meat or chemicalized food, processed food, all that's going through into her breast milk also. Now, from the peer-reviewed journal Cell Metabolism, an article entitled When You Eat, Not Just What You Eat Matters. I'll quote this. When it comes time to weight gain, when you eat might be as important as what you eat. That's the conclusions of a new study. And this was a laboratory study on a high-fat diet, restricted eating for 8 hours per day. They ate just as much as those who can eat around the clock, yet they are protected against obesity and other metabolic ills, the new study shows. The discovery suggests that the health consequences of a poor diet might result in part from a mismatch between our body clocks and our eating schedules. Quote, every organ has a clock, says the lead researcher from the Salk Institute for Biological Studies. Now, in lay language, what that means is there are times that our livers, our intestines, our muscles, and other organs will work at peak efficiency, and other times when they are more or less sleeping. Those metabolic cycles are critical for processes from cholesterol breakdown to glucose production, and they should be primed to turn on when we eat and back off when we don't, or vice versa. So, quote, when we eat randomly, those genes aren't on completely or off completely. End quote. Well, the principle is just like it is with sleep and waking. If we don't sleep well at night, we aren't completely awake during the day, and we work less efficiently as a consequence. Here's the idea. I suggest that we have a liquid breakfast. Why? Because our body from 4 a.m. until 11 a.m. is in a very heightened anabolic state, meaning build-up, energy production. The mitochondria are really pumping. That's when you need energy, but you need energy that's easily and quickly assimilated and utilized. Hence, if it's in liquefied form, like a juice with your compounding powders and your coconut oil and your flaxseed oil and anything else you put in there that you feel is important to you, that's really getting into the cells. That's good. Then always have your, unless there's something that precludes this, but have your main meal in the afternoon. That's always important because by 4 o'clock, listen carefully, this is important, by 4 o'clock, our body begins to go into a catabolic state. It doesn't do it all at once, but that's why you get the afternoon kind of sleepiness and you feel dead tired. Now, if you take a little nap or you take a little rest or you have a little refreshment, that anabolic level, the catabolic level will bounce back a little bit. But then if you have a heavy meal in the evening or snacks after that meal, you're putting energy into the body when the body is conserving energy. And that's why we should put our emphasis upon what we can do in the morning and up to about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So if you did not eat, except maybe very lightly, in the early evening, and then nothing else the rest of the night, you're going to lose weight, have more energy, and be in balance. And where I grew up, that's what people did. You didn't see people snacking all the time. And a late dinner was 6 o'clock. Most time it was 5 o'clock, and we had dinner. And so I'm suggesting that we control when we eat and not just have food anytime we feel the need for it, because then we're going to be overeating and then we're going to get fatter. Here are some things to think about. First, sometime in the next 6 months, I will have completed the post-production of my film on growing old in America. It's one of 6 I'm currently working on. Here's the latest medical news today. Quote, U.S. seniors are going hungry. I'll quote this verbatim. Quote, a new study that looked at the hunger trends over the last 10 years found that 14.85% of seniors in the United States, that's more than 1 in 7, face the threat of hunger. That's 8.3 million seniors. And then it goes on to talk about this. What they didn't do is what I'm doing. Go state to state, talk with people in their homes, look in their refrigerators, see nothing. Look in their cupboards, see cat food that they're eating for as human food. These are the things that bother me. And that's why I load up my car, my trunk, with as much food as possible to give to people as I can. And because these are very proud people. And when I see how they're adapting, either because of pensions been robbed or gone, increasing cost of living, and a lot of these people, a lot of the new seniors, are still deeply in debt over their children's education. They wanted to go to the best schools, and they paid. One woman, for example, I interviewed 2 weeks ago, this was typical. She said that she worked for 25 years for a corporation. And then the corporation brought in someone 25 years old who worked there for 4 months and then took her job at half the pay and none of the benefits. There was no severance outside, I think she said she got 3 weeks. And initially she thought, okay, I'll find another job because I'm highly qualified. She couldn't. She didn't realize how many other people were out there looking who had even more qualifications and willing to work for less. Then she waited too long, even though she lives frugally, and because she had 3 children who came late in her life and who were in colleges, and she had co-signed on their notes. None of them had gainful employment, so she was the one, now that they were out of college, having to pay for it. Plus, she had mortgaged her home at the height of the market to do this. So all these missteps, because she trusted the economists, she trusted the president, she trusted all the people along the road who told her everything was fine. It wasn't. And then she started to realize that she had run out of cash. It took her 2.5 years, but she had no cash, and then she started to sell stuff. And she wasn't getting anywhere near the value. She's getting like 10 cents on the dollar. And now she lives in one room of this house, pretty good size house, Victorian house, one room. And she's cut off all services that she absolutely didn't need. And one of her children gave her a cell phone, but outside of that, she has no phone. She has no cable television. She does have radio, and she has television. And she minimizes her travel because she can't afford it. And she lives on crackers and peanut butter. And she volunteers at some places at food banks because she can also eat there. She doesn't want anyone to know her problems because she's embarrassed by them. I said, how many of your friends are in your situation? She said, you can't believe how many people never thought this would be happening to them after all they committed to and all they did. But it has. I said, well, why aren't you angry? She says, oh, I was angry, but I don't believe a single politician in the United States. They're all liars, she said. She says, everybody's lying. I don't trust to believe anyone anymore. And yet I used to be very optimistic and believe and trusted everyone. I don't go to church anymore because I don't believe the preacher. I don't believe the people. Give a damn about anyone. She says, I'm in that apathetic stage of my life. And she said, the trouble is I've lived a fairly healthy life, so I'll probably live a long time. So I got a lot of pain and suffering ahead of me unless something changes. And she said, I don't see anybody at all in power anywhere in the United States doing anything. And my friends and I all kind of agree upon this. She says, but maybe you know something I don't know because you're from New York and you travel a lot. She said, are there any people out there advocating for the tens of millions of us seniors who are poor and struggling and suffering? I said, no, they're not. That person doesn't exist. That politician doesn't exist. They may have some sympathy if it benefits them at election time to make you an issue, but that's all smoke and mirrors. These are cons. These are pimps for all the special interest groups, and we all know that. That's something we absolutely agreed upon. But when you walk away from someone's house like that, you get in a car, and you see someone sitting on a porch, and you realize that tomorrow's not going to change for them. There is no bright future for all these people in America. I wish there were, but there's not. And the worst is yet ahead. Now, how's that a way to start a day when you're trying to find something? But this is a story that has to be told. If we don't tell the story, then we don't know it exists. Just like the vets. You have no idea how many people across America now, vet organizations, are watching this film, and they see it. It gets them angry. They cry. They can't believe that we would treat our vets this way. But we do. And unless you can say the truth, Fox isn't going to tell you the truth. Geraldo sure as hell not going to tell you the truth. Bill O'Reilly can't even spell the word truth. He can spell megalomania, narcissism, self-interest, bloviating. Those he's good at. But where is the truth in our media? Until you understand what suffering is, and you can only understand it when you look in the eyes of it, and when you see house after house, door after door, that you go through, and you hear people and you're saying, why in the world aren't there stories out there? Because we don't want to know about this. Well, too bad. We're going to tell you about it. So that's the latest today. U.S. seniors are going hungry. Yeah, okay. And we'd rather pay attention to what? What's in the headlines today that's so significant? What's more important than millions upon millions of seniors going homeless and being hungry, or with a home and hungry? That disturbs me. Now, two issues, and then I'm going to open it up for calls and go to our guests. These are short. This is from Michael Payne from Op-Ed News. It's short. Corporatism's plan for the dumbing down of America. I'll quote this verbatim. Corporatism is a very powerful, aggressive entity that has a very ambitious objective in mind, to take control of this nation's political system, then the government, and finally our democracy. In accelerating this process, it is following a plan which calls for the dumbing down of America. The strategy, when we consider the corporate mentality and actions and behavior, is simply this. The American people, under current conditions, are an obstacle standing in the way of this objective, and so they must be neutralized, moved out of the way. Corporatism, a.k.a. corporate America, can be viewed as an apparent organization with the military-industrial complex as its largest, most powerful division. The other divisions, including the major transnational corporations, Wall Street, the U.S. Congress, 100% Republicans, and nearly as many percentage of Democrats, the U.S. Supreme Court, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the Republican state governors and their legislators, the combination of these various divisions make for a very powerful force that is trying to steamroll its way across our America. So let's talk about how this powerful, organizing, aggressive plan and agenda designed to dumb down America and what they expect to gain by their main strategies. One of their primary goals is to significantly weaken this nation's political process and democracy by using every tactic and technique at their disposal to water down or even eliminate the voting rights of specific segments of the electorate. This organization and its legislators and governors and backers have been enacting laws that mandate the use of photo IDs as a voting requirement. They are obviously targeting African Americans, Hispanics, and other strong supporters of the Democratic Party. Their goal is to create an atmosphere that frustrates and discourages potential left-leaning voters to the point that they stay at home. It's their primary tool for voter suppression. Their aim is to cloud and condition the minds of Americans to such an extent that they remain uninformed, or so misinformed that they become irrelevant to the political process and allow the system to become even more corrupted. This is largely accomplished through the corporate-controlled mainstream media that they use to spread their propaganda. They want the American people to immerse themselves in movies that feature intense violence, space aliens, vampires, and in watching scores of pathetic situation comedies and reality TV shows. They want people to become so addicted to their smartphones, texting, and use of infinite number of apps that they no longer have any time to become better informed about the myriad of problems facing America. They use their monopoly of the newspapers and TV stations and radio stations to send out a constant stream of news filled with violence, hatred, and really nothing of any real substance. They devote no time to debates or deep discussions about the nation's problems. There are virtually no in-depth discussions of solutions to the problems the country faces. They want the people to become robotic, to become like Sheppel, that combination of sheep and cattle with a herd mentality. Education is the key to America's future, and it is now coming under widespread siege. Tuitions continue to upward climb, and young Americans have to literally sign themselves into bondage as they incur large student loans. These loans now collectively exceed $1 trillion. Then, after graduation, millions of students struggle to pay back those large debts, while a great many of them can't even find jobs. When education should be this nation's greatest priority, it is instead being grossly neglected, and teachers, the cornerstone of this great institution, are coming under constant attack and losing their jobs all across the country. And we ask why? Because it's a part of the overall plan. When the mass of the American people slowly but surely become less educated, less creative, and less innovative, they will then become more passive, more submissive, and far easier to manipulate and control. This is a national disgrace. We're heading towards a two-tiered system of education. On the one hand, a system of advanced education for those in the higher income groups who will be recruited to become the designated leaders of American masters of Wall Street. And secondly, one in which the majority of American students, those at the lower income levels, will attend vocational schools for the most part. When this egregious agenda to dumb down America becomes reality, one of its greatest benefits will be the creation of an endless stream of recruits for the voluntary U.S. military. Young, undereducated Americans will readily join up because there is no other place for them to earn a decent salary. That steady supply of military fodder will be used in pursuit of America's future resource wars that will be necessary to further establish control over world's declining petrochemical reserves. They will also be needed to maintain the vast military empire that shows no signs of reducing its presence over this entire planet. As improbable as it might seem, the decimated American workforce could be a beneficiary of this plan, albeit not exactly what workers might like. In the future, at the cost of ocean transportation becomes prohibitive, and it certainly will be as the supply of petroleum continues to decline and costs skyrocket. U.S. corporations will have to wean themselves off of cheap foreign labor, and when they do, they will need to resurrect the American workforce. But they will want to create a new workforce, not the kind that they had previously dealt with. This time, they want to hire workers who are very desperate, so desperate that they will take any kind of job at almost any wage. They want a workforce that will be America's version of cheap Chinese labor. That's part of it. Your thoughts. I'm Gary Noll, back in a moment with my guest and newsmaker updates. Please stay with us. Everyone, I'm Gary Noll. We're going to go to our guests. We have two newsmaker guests today. Plus, I have a question for those in the audience who live in Connecticut. As I'm not in the city, I'm not always up on everything, but I was very concerned about a larger bill, HB 5117, because I believe that in every state we should be mandating through referendums in the upcoming elections the labeling of any genetically engineered product. Now, we succeeded in California. Hundreds of thousands of people from this audience joined, 1 million people from small grassroots organizations, and we won that. I'm sure that that will pass, and people in California who want healthier food will not want genetically engineered food, so we'll pass that law. Having a rougher time in Connecticut because the governor up there unfortunately sides with the genetic engineering people. He's a corporatist from head to toe. Not a populist at all. So send the word to Governor Malloy that you don't want genetically engineered foods and you want everything labeled. Now, where that stands, I don't know. So if you could let us know, we'll pass it on. But I was told that Connecticut nixed the GMO labeling effort on May 11th, and the labeling was a provision included in a larger bill, HB 5117. That bill is still alive. However, the grassroots organizations I'm in touch with are now advocating to defeat the entire bill. That's what I'm hoping for, defeat the whole bill. Let me know about that. Now let's go over and say hello to my guest. Les Leopold is one of the co-founders and directors of the two nonprofit educational organizations, the Labor Institute and the Public Health Institute. He also helped create the Blue Green Alliance, and an organization that emerges labor unions with environmental concerns, such as the Sierra Club, though the Sierra Club is not high up on my list of organizations to support. Ralph Nader, by the way, listed Les's award-winning book, The Man Who Hated Work and Loved Labor, on his recommended top 10 reading list. His recent book, The Looting of America, How Wall Street's Game of Fantasy Finance Destroyed Our Jobs, Pension, and Prosperity, in my opinion, is perhaps the single best introduction for anyone who wishes to fully understand the main issues and economic jargon about our economic collapse. This is a newsmaker interview, hence shorter, and all about the points of the day. Nice to have you with us today, Les.
Thank you very much for having me, and thanks for the kind words.
Les, we just took a look at J.P. Morgan. What we didn't see is this. The people who were lobbying for the Dodd-Frank bill, the Wall Street Reform Bill, were J.P. Morgan lobbyists. They helped write that bill. In fact, all of your top Wall Street firms had a lot of input into the bill and into the politicians' war chests by giving enormous donations. In fact, Wall Street gave more donations than any other group. So the American public doesn't know any of this. They don't know who really writes the laws. It's not the legislators. They don't know that J.P. Morgan, that has over $2 trillion in assets, could lose $2 billion, and not even think twice about it. It's an embarrassment, but it doesn't mean anything. And now the president is bragging about how smart this guy is who runs J.P. Morgan and how good a company it is. Instead of saying, why can't we do the following? I'm going to ask you this. Here's my five questions. Why? Why can't we ban, outlaw, against the law, all derivatives? Why can't we ban credit default swaps trading, which are now the biggest ticking time bomb in the world? They exceed the resource of the world by almost 10 times. Why can't we ban trading in commodities essential life, where you can't make money, you can't make a penny by manipulating unless you're actually buying and selling and using things essential to life? Water, for example, food, for example, land, for example, and currencies. And lastly, why can't we reinstate the Glass-Steagall Act so we actually have banks that are savings and loan versus banks that are casino capitalist banks? Could you address those in light of what we're seeing not happen with any of the people who caused the debacle, caused the great loss, caused $13 trillion to be lost in real estate and savings and investment portfolio, and not a single one of those people has been held accountable. Not one of their institutions has been held accountable. So we're not going to hold them accountable. This administration's in bed with them, the last one, the next one will be. So what do? The forum is yours.
Well, thank you. Look, those are great points, and I wouldn't argue against any of them. I mean, they all could be done and should be done. Here's the problem. We are in a new era. I would call it financial feudalism. The Wall Street is so large and so powerful that it's now in a position of extracting hidden taxes from us all. It's not just that they do, that they gamble. It's that the money that they are earning is siphoning from the real economy. They're not earning money because they're producing real economic value. When you don't produce real economic value, it means you're taking the money from the economy. And all of us are paying for it. Obviously, we paid for it in the form of bailouts. We're paying for it in terms of unemployment insurance. We're paying for it in terms of lost revenues that are causing government deficits, and on and on and on, all the way to what you talked about earlier in your program about seniors not having money to buy food and et cetera. This all is a direct result of money being siphoned to this kind of Wall Street behemoth. And I don't think, frankly, Glass-Steagall would be wonderful, but it's not enough. These entities are way too big. There's way too much money in finance. The money has to be siphoned out of finance, and I think that the financial speculation tax, the financial transaction tax, that would be a sales tax on all this financial manipulation would suck a whole lot of money out. And the institutions have to be broken up. Even if you split large banks, you would have, you know, six large banks and six large investment banks, six large commercial banks, under a new Glass-Steagall. Those banks would be too big to fail. Those banks would still dominate. Those banks would still siphon money from the American people. Look, we hate a tax system that we think is unfair. This is the most unfair tax system because it's hidden, people don't know it's there, and it's taking money from all of us. And it gets stronger and stronger and stronger. And the reason I call it, it's like feudalism, in that it's the privatized government. It's much larger and more powerful than the other corporate entities that you were referring to earlier. This is the dominant economic entity now. And you're going to hear politicians of all stripes, from Obama to Romney to everyone else, are going to be fearful of taking these guys on because they're so strong. So what we need is for the Gary Nulls and the other, you know, 1,000 progressive media people and all the good organizers out there to pull together a movement strong enough to do battle with them. It's the only language any of them are going to understand. When Obama said something, he says, I'm a long time ago, remember, he said, I stand between you. I'm the only thing that stands between you and the pitchforks. You know, that kind of populist movement is what we need to build.
But we need to build it with authentic people, not the sociopaths, psychopaths who run our country today.
Well, we need to build it from the bottom up.
I say get rid of every single major organization in the United States. That's why I said about the Sierra Club.
Uh-huh.
Last year when I was a keynote speaker at the UN and on Earth Day, I went after all the major environmental groups saying how you sold out, and I gave specific amounts of money and then how mm-hmm. they stopped being against gas hydrofracking, against nuclear, and against this, against that. And they were surprised because, you know, you're supposed to act like you're on NPR, you know, where NPR is great, very intellectual, very accomplished people who have no courage at all. They don't ask ever a hard question. It's like, get on NPR, you have to take off your head, and everything below the waist and above the neck is exempt from being on the air. So everything's like Wonder Bread for the brain. And so they were expecting this kind of nice talk, and then everybody applauds and everybody goes home. And I nailed them against the wall, saying, how in the world can you take all this money? Well, we've got to stop money in the system. How simple is this? Simply ban all money from all elections. How hard is that to grasp?
Well, look, that's an excellent point. I'm not so quick to write off a lot of these organizations because, you know, there's 800,000 people in the Sierra Club, and there are a lot of good people in there. But I think what's happened is over the last generation, the movement for social change got balkanized. People got started to see the world only through their silo, their issue silo, or their set of issues. So we have organizations for every kind of issue that you could ever imagine. And there are lots of good people involved, and they do a tremendous amount of work. But we had a silo-breaking event. The crash on Wall Street wasn't just a little blip in the economy. It signaled a fundamental change in our lives, and that should have broken the silos apart. And we saw a bit of what silo busting looked like when Occupy Wall Street came up. At least there was a movement, unconstrained by the silos, and actually caught the imagination of the American people. Now, what we need is something like that on an ongoing basis that involves all of us. I hope that wasn't a missed opportunity, but it showed how people really don't like what's going on Wall Street. By the way, it was called Occupy Wall Street, not Occupy Walmart. It's not going to work if we just use the language of Occupy and then spread it around through all our silos. No, it was Wall Street's centrality in our lives.
Okay. I get your message, Les, and I respect that. But here's what I would ask you, my final comment on this. Why don't you write an email all the people that you respect at Sierra Club and ask how many of those 700,000 were with us when we protested hydrofracking and anti-nuclear power outside of Indian Point or Diablo or up at the Connecticut plant and Vermont plant. And also, because I was asking him, where are you from? I didn't see any of the executives from any environmental group ever at any. And ask how many of them were down in Washington when Jeffrey Smith and Vandana Shiva and the rest of us were there, and about 6,000 people in this audience were there, and we were protesting in front of the White House genetic engineering. I didn't see anybody from Sierra Club or any of these other organizations there. So I'm a little tough ass on this, and I'm going to stay tough ass on this because I'm sick and tired of these dilettantes from these organizations who get a massive amounts of money, who have lots of membership, and nobody does diddly squat to actually change anything. Now, you show me someone from that group that's actually getting out there and getting arrested, along with McKibben and the others who have the courage to do so, and Chris Hedges. Let me see if the Sierra Club 700,000 members all got together for one event and got arrested to stop the pipelines coming from Canada to tar sands. It would have stopped that issue dead in its tracks because a lot of those people are policy makers and opinion leaders. I didn't see any of those people there. I didn't see that.
Yeah, this is an interesting conversation. I'm not. Look, if you want,
I can't stand the Sierra Club and all of the people involved with it.
I'm not here to defend the Sierra Club.
Okay, I know. I know. That's separate.
But this is very symptomatic of why I think that we're not taking on Wall Street, because we do not have common ground. You're just illustrating it perfectly. We should have a deeper, more powerful conversation about what's behind all this phenomena that you're talking about. All these incredibly important issues that you stake your life on, that you spend your time masterfully letting us all become more aware and fighting hard. But the big fight we're not having. We're not taking on Wall Street. we're taking on each other. And maybe that's a necessary first condition, but it's not good enough. I want to hear how we're going to take on Wall Street.
I agree, but why don't you stop?
If Sierra Club's not taking on Wall Street, then I'm taking them to task.
Okay.
If you're not taking on Wall Street, but I know you are, I would take you to task. That's the message. That's the thing that will unify us. Without that, we're going to be chewing on each other's legs indefinitely.
I absolutely agree with you, and I appreciate your final comment, and I respect all the good work you do, and thank you for trying to be the ambassador between those of my like myself and those who are looking at the zombies of the left and the right.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks a lot. Les Leopold, my guest, newsmaker guest. Now let's go over and speak with our next newsmaker guest, who is standing by, Gerald Celante. And many of you already know Gerald. He is a very powerful and impassioned voice going up against the official economists and the official experts. And today I've asked him to take an issue not against Krugman, the Nobel Prize winning columnist for the New York Times, but rather the fact that 2 years and 2 months ago on this program, we spent 1 hour, Gerald Celante and myself, discussing the likely outcome of bailouts, austerity programs, the politics of going on in the Eurozone, the 27 nations of the Eurozone, the 17 use their currency. And we laid out, and since that time, we've done 14 additional programs in detail, not general statements. And we predicted that Greece would fall, that Greece would go off the euro, that Greece would finally get a government in there, that the people would throw out the old people who were the political hacks, and that you would see a form of form similar to Iceland, where they're just saying, no, we're not going to pay you. We're going to rebuild our own economy. We're going to keep this money here. We're going to learn some lessons about responsible governance and responsible citizenry, but we're not going to allow you to use us forever in debt peonage. Gerald Celante said that on this show, but the world didn't hear that, and the New York Times didn't print it. But today, when Paul Krugman says, ooh, really bad things are happening in Greece, and quote, apocalypse fairly soon, Gerald Celante, nice to have you with us.
Oh, it's always great being on with you. Thank you, Gary.
I don't want to include any of my guests in supporting or challenging anything I said before, but I just want you, the people to know in any conversation I have with Les Leopold, we're starting fresh with this one. Let's take a look. I want you to take a look uninterrupted of what you see Krugman saying. Apocalypse fairly soon. Wall Street saying, we hope not. All the banks and our government saying they better not. And then the reality of what you're likely to see happen in Greece, and then Ireland, Spain, Italy, Portugal, Slovakia. Your turn.
Well, in reading Krugman's piece, he begins with, suddenly it has become easy to see how the euro, that grand flawed experiment in monetary union without political union, could come apart at the seams. Suddenly? Suddenly for who? For a blind person to see it? As you pointed out, we've been saying this for years. We said the Eurozone was going to collapse when it began. And this piece by Krugman, only they can get away with it. It's the same club. They're wrong time after time after time, and yet they come out and make a statement, and everybody listens. Apocalypse fairly soon? No, Junior. Apocalypse now. If you're living in Spain, and you're one of the 25% plus that are unemployed, if you're one of the 50% plus young adult unemployed, it's apocalypse now. If you live in Greece, if you live in Portugal, if you live in Italy, Ireland, if you live in Lithuania, Hungary, Romania, Bulgaria, if you live in any part of the world that's going through this, it's apocalypse now. And by the time they see it coming, it's too late. And this thing is just, I mean, the language is kiddie crap, you know, and he talks about things, you know, that we have to hope for this and hope for that. Yeah, how about hope and change? And the only thing that he's right about when he says Europe's answer has been austerity, savage spending cuts, an attempt to reassure bond markets. Yet, as any sensible economist could have told you, and not him included, and These cuts deepened the depression in Europe's troubled economies, which both further undermined investor confidence and led to growing political instability. Let's take that first word. Undermine investor confidence. Gary, what's an investor? I'll tell you what an investor is. It's a gambler. Investor. I'm tired of this investor crap. These are gamblers. They're money junkies. They can't kick the habit. It's like a freak going to Atlantic City or Las Vegas or a lotto junkie playing and thinking they're going to win. But there's one big difference here. When the money junkies like Jamie Dimon or Lloyd, I'm doing God's Worth blank fine, when they lose, we pay. And it's like you mentioned, you know, about J.P. Morgan with this $2 billion. It's chump change. J.P. Morgan's investment unit, the same one, has $100 billion of risky bonds. Again, not risky bonds. That's the wrong language. That's white shoe boy language. It's bad bets. The whole thing is coming apart at the seams. And as we said in the spring 2011 Trends Journal, the first great war of the 21st century has begun. You see them out in the streets. 100,000 people in the tiny Czech Republic protesting corruption in the government. Did it make the news? No. Last week, hundreds of thousands taken to the streets in Spain. Hey, what do you think about gay marriage? Let's talk about that until we can't talk about it anymore. That didn't make the news. Every day there are suicides in Italy and Greece and all these countries at record levels. Robberies. It's falling apart. It's war. It's class warfare. And this is what's going on. There is no saving the European Union. We said it when it began. It began when it was the beginning of globalization. You and I and those old enough to remember in the 1970s and 80s and early 90s, it was up until 1991, there was no Russia. When did the Berlin Wall fall? 89. Everything was locked behind the Iron Curtain. There was no globalization. China, everybody thought of China, they thought of Mao and rickshaws. There was no China. India, forget India. The only thing people knew about India was Gandhi. Brazil, what BRIC nations? Who cared? Didn't exist. In other words, they created globalization so the money junkies could consolidate it all and make it easy with the Eurozone. And we said that at this high point of globalization, yeah, it looks fine. But as soon as it starts breaking down, the whole thing will break apart with it. And now, the frauds out there, these so-called economists, who was saying that it would be a disaster if the Greeks fell out of the Eurozone. You know what they're chatting now? Oh, it won't be that bad. Greece is only 2% of the euro, of the GDP of the European Monetary Union. We're looking at governments failing all over that monetary union. 17 monetary union members, 12 governments have gone out. 12 of them. And you're going to see more of it. And by the way, they're bastardizing the language. For example, with the Spanish, the new government in the left, they call it the radical left. No, that radical's really not the right term for it. It's a non-traditional. So, but they use the language so that it makes it seem far left groups. Far left groups? How about criminal operations calling themselves the center? So that's what's going on in a nutshell.
I have one last quick question for you. Looking forward, I'm concerned about the following, and take any piece of this concern and address it, if you would, please. I'm concerned that that at some point there's a high probability after Obama gets elected, if he does, that Israel will attack Iran. If that happens, I see China doing something that I believe it has wanted to do for a long time, that is getting rid of a lot of the dollars which they've already been doing by these 17 phantom cities with 65 million empty housing units there, and all these factories and lands they're renting, leasing, and buying, by getting low enough that they could stop giving us dollars and justify doing that because of their support for Iran, Russia's support for Iran, India's support for Iran, and that would immediately cause the dollar to become worth a whole lot less, and people would be in our country smacked down by very high gas prices, hyperinflation on everything. That's not even being discussed anywhere today, and yet our media, without exception, is rallying around Israel, its right to self-determination, its right to protect itself, and the politicians there, along with their AIPAC friends. And behind all this is China. And China's in a bubble economy now with this housing, and it's deflating, and they're going to take a big, hard landing on this, but they can survive that. But I think at some point, they're going to want to be the number one power in the world economically. And if they drop the dollar as the reserve currency and start trading amongst themselves, that'll absolutely happen. Whether it's official or unofficial, by fiat, it will happen. And America will get hit broadsided. People will think that they're in the Great Depression times five. Your thoughts?
Well, on Iran, we may not have to wait until after Obama is reelected. And by the way, we think he will. And of course, I'm a political atheist. I don't believe in any of this stuff. So it's not a forecast that we're making because we want it to happen. And it's a lesser of two evils and doesn't mean anything to us, whoever gets in there. But just pick up today's paper in the New York Times. U.S. envoy to Israel says nation is ready on Iran. The American ambassador to Israel said this week that not only was America willing to use military force to stop Iran from developing nuclear weapons, but that preparations had already been made for a possible attack. The United States and Europe has already declared war on Iran by imposing these draconian embargoes and on their oil. It's an act of war. It's a reverse of what the United States did to Japan prior to World War II by cutting them out of the markets to get natural resources. Now they're cutting Iran out of the market to sell their resources. On the China issue, as goes the U.S., so goes China. And so goes Europe, as goes China. For example, when you look at who China exports the most to, it's
Gerald,
the United
hold
States
one second.
Europe.
I just realized we're at the end of this hour. However, here's what I'd like to do. Our next program is starting. I would like to have Michael G., our engineer, call you back so that you can be heard on all the land-based stations around the United States that carry this program, which are a lot. And I had one more question that I think is essential to the people in this audience. So if you could hang up, we'll call you right back. I just want to say goodbye to our audience. I have to go do another program now, but thank you very much for listening.
You say, hey, oh.